evening. I'd like to welcome you to this special public lecture put on by the Law Department. I should first of all begin by thanking two bodies that have provided funding for us within the LSE, STICKERT, which is associated with research in economics. I won't try and break down the whole acronym, and the Shimizu Trust, which funds events within law. And they very kindly helped fund the organization for this. Our speaker this evening is David Weisbach from the University of Chicago, where he's with the law school. He's also director of the Olin program in law and economics, so brings a slightly wider background. He is in fact, by background and inclination, a specialist in taxation, although the talk this evening is not about taxation, I hasten to add for those who are concerned about it. But he has experience of that through both practice and working in the US Treasury Department for a number of years. He's now been at the University of Chicago for 6 years? 5 years?
4 years.
4 years, sorry. 2 years at Georgetown University. 4 years at the University of Chicago. So he has a wealth of experience to bring to the topic this evening, which is, should legal rules be used for redistribution? A topic that raises issues transcending both legal issues and wider economic and social questions. Professor Weisbach, please. I think. And we will have, there'll be an opportunity for questions afterwards.
Great, thanks, Ian. It's really an honor to be invited here to speak. It's actually a long-standing connection between the University of Chicago Law School and London School of Economics, which is that the Nobel Prize winner, Ronald Coase, served on both our faculties. He serves on the law school faculty now. He's been there for almost 40 years, and he was on the London School of Law and Economics faculty starting in 1935, and he was here for some long period of time. I can actually tell you that Mr. Coase says, even after 40 years at the University of Chicago, that his time at the London School of Economics was the highlight of his career, and he views London School of Economics as the epitome of an academic institution. There's another connection to Coase today, which is a talk I'm going to give is based on a lecture at the University of Chicago Law School called the Coase Lecture. And the Coase Lecture is designed or supposed to summarize an area of law and economics or recent research in law and economics for non-specialists. And I was invited to give the Coase Lecture last year, and the area I spoke about then, and that I'll speak about today as well, is the role of redistributive policies in the law. And the question really is how we should evaluate a legal rule that attempts to redistribute. The distribution of wealth, of course, is incredibly important. In the United States right now, we are reaching historic levels of inequality or concentration of wealth. It's getting close to the levels of concentration we saw in the Gilded Age before the enactment of the income tax. Right now, 1% of our population has 40% of the wealth in the country. And this is notwithstanding the growth that we saw in the 90s. Evaluating legal rules, of course, is also important. It really is what we are about as legal academics. We need to understand when we think a legal rule is a good rule and when we think it's a bad rule. So the goal then is to think about the combination of these two things. How do we evaluate legal rules when they attempt to redistribute? Now, law and economics scholars, particularly at my institution, the University of Chicago, have long argued that efficiency should be the primary goal in the law. So redistribution through legal rules, such as legal rules that attempt to help the poor, by deviating from the efficient result, it has been argued, is inappropriate, and instead the law should merely focus on efficiency. Now, I don't think people outside University of Chicago took this argument very seriously, and perhaps because it wasn't made very well. In the last few years, however, these arguments have been strengthened significantly, and I think now they're worth a serious review. And that's my purpose here, to evaluate the recent arguments that have been made on whether legal rules should be efficient. I'll offer some new twists on the arguments that you can find in the literature, but my main goal today is to summarize where the literature is and review it and evaluate it. All right, let me break down the question into two parts. First, I'm going to ask whether legal rules should be used to redistribute income. Right, that is, should legal rules systematically favor the poor? Now, income, of course, is the primary source of inequality in our society. The numbers that I've mentioned above on wealth were basically income-type numbers, so I think the income question is really the primary question. And we might ask ourselves things like whether we should have pro-tenant, landlord-tenant rules, on a theory that tenants are systematically poorer than landlords. But conceivably, we might. We might think that redistributing from the rich to the poor is a good idea. Pro-tenant landlord rules help the poor. Therefore, they're a good idea. We might ask whether we want to have pro-consumer warranty rules or consumer warranty rules because consumers are systematically poorer than producers. We might ask whether we want to have pro-plaintiff tort rules on the theory that plaintiffs are systematically poorer than defendants. We might have pro-debtor bankruptcy rules on the theory that debtors are systematically poorer than creditors. Right? A common thought might be that these types of rules are a good idea because they help the poor and disadvantaged. Right? Law should be viewed as a means of doing social justice. It's not a sterile instrument that comes out of a vacuum. Instead, it should help us be the best we can be. It should help the poor. I'll argue to the contrary that, in fact, legal rules should not be geared to systematically redistribute towards the poor. But this is not out of a lack of concern for equality or for redistribution. Instead, the argument is that there's a better method of doing it. In particular, the tax system is a better method of doing it. Using the tax system allows us to achieve more redistribution at the same cost or the same amount of redistribution at a lower cost. We have a better method of redistributing, and the more we care about equality, the more then we should want to use the best method we can. So the more you care about equality, the more this argument should have bite. All right, the first question is that I just said is about income redistribution. That's where I think the argument has the most bite. The second question I'll focus on is whether legal rules should be used to redistribute on other grounds. So for example, we might have a legal rule that favors the disabled, not because the disabled are poorer than other people, but because the disabled are worse off than others at the same level of income. My conclusions here are basically the same. Once again, direct redistribution is likely to be more efficient than legal rules that favor the disadvantaged class. I'm a little bit more tentative on these other conclusions, the non-income conclusions, but basically, I think it's the same arguments hold. If we combine these arguments, then we conclude that, in fact, legal rules should not be used to redistribute at all, and in fact, should be merely efficient. Okay. The game plan is to start by setting forth my working assumptions and give some background on redistribution. Most, if not all of you, will be familiar with this material, but I think a quick review will be helpful. Then I want to turn to a comparison of legal rules and the tax system as methods of redistributing, or actually redistributing income. Then third, I want to talk about redistributing on non-income grounds, and fourth and finally talk about some counterarguments and some caveats. All right, let me start by talking about my assumptions and reminding everyone of the basic economics of redistribution. So all view redistribution is desirable primarily because of the declining marginal utility of wealth or income. Right, the idea is that a dollar given to a pauper is more important to him than that same dollar to the billionaire. The pauper might use the dollar to feed himself. The billionaire will use the extra dollar to polish the teak on his yacht. Okay, two quick footnotes on this. There might be many other reasons for redistribution, and I don't want to exclude those, but I'm primarily going to focus on marginal utility. Other reasons might be, for example, that the rich might feel altruistic to the poor. Another reason for redistribution might be a form of social insurance. There, but for the grace of God, go I. Therefore, we want to have redistribution to keep us from being in that bad state of nature. The focus, however, is on declining marginal utility. Second, some people have asserted, in particular at this institution, in fact, that we cannot know that the pauper values the dollar more than the billionaire. Right? That is, we cannot have interpersonal comparisons of utility. Since we can't do that, we cannot justify redistribution on the grounds of declining marginal utility. Now, this argument has a long and distinguished history. I personally have trouble taking it seriously. We cannot avoid making decisions that affect resource allocation, the distribution of wealth, or welfare in our society, and merely because we cannot know for certain who values the dollar more, the pauper or the billionaire, doesn't mean that the default should go to the person who has the dollar now, the billionaire. Instead, we should make our best guess as to where that dollar is most valuable and draw our conclusions from that. And I think the best guess is fairly clear. All right, without more, declining marginal utility of income would, as Edgeworth pointed out, cause us to want to redistribute until all incomes were exactly equal. But of course, redistribution is costly, and therefore we can't do it. Not only are there the administrative costs of redistribution, measuring income, collecting the money, filing returns and whatnot, there are costs in terms of incentives. Right? In particular, if we have an income tax, we take money from people, and therefore each hour of work brings less to them. So for example, if you previously earned £10 an hour, and we take 40% of your income away, you now earn only £6 an hour. This means that the trade-off between working and not working is changed. Work is relatively less attractive than leisure. As a result, we can expect people to work less when we impose an income tax. Why spend those extra hours, for example, moonlighting at a second job, when there's not all that much reward? And this distortion, a distortion in the labor-leisure choice, results in efficiency losses. Right? The overall size of the pie, including the amount we have to redistribute, goes down because people work less. A metaphor that's frequently used is that redistribution is a leaky bucket. When we try and transfer money from one person to another, the bucket leaks. And what's the size of the distortion? Well, there's a lot of studies, and as you might guess, the studies are quite conflicting. They produce results that are quite different from one another. And the reason is it's difficult to measure the size of distortion. One story is that distortion is small because people tend to work relatively fixed hours. So if you have a 40-hour a week job, you can't choose to reduce those hours to 35 hours a week merely because the income tax has gone up. Another story is that the distortion is large, particularly for various subclasses of individuals. So a moonlighter might not choose to work all those extra hours because of the income tax, and therefore might be very responsive to changes in tax rates. Second earners are thought to, with quite good evidence, to be responsive, or very responsive to changes in tax rates. And even primary earners with fixed jobs that require 40 hours or so a week can respond in a variety of subtle ways, such as in how much they invest in their education or their training, or how hard they work for advancement. The empirical debate on the size of distortion will go on. It's not really a lawyer's debate, it's more of an economist debate. But for our purposes, all we need to know, really, is that the distortion is not zero, that there is some distortion there. And in addition, regardless of the size of the distortion initially at low tax rates, the size of the distortion is thought to go up with tax rates, and in fact, it goes up very fast. It goes up with the square of tax rates. So as tax rates go up and get high, the size of the distortion will inevitably be large, even if you think initially it might be small. All right, to balance the benefits of redistribution with the costs of redistribution, we need to get our heads together and think about our values. We need to have some ethical decisions about how much we're willing to pay for equality. I will assume here that we can represent our decision on this matter through a social welfare function. Okay, the choice of social welfare functions, and whether one is even possible, and there are disputes about that, is subject to a long and distinguished philosophical debate. It's not my aim here to add to that debate. I don't want to impose on you any particular views about the value of redistribution. Instead, I will assume three things about this. First, I'll assume we can have a social welfare function that expresses our values, expresses how much we're willing to trade off the cost of redistribution and the value of equality. Second, I'll assume that we care about the welfare of individuals. That is, what adds to social welfare is how well off individuals are. In particular, I'll assume there's no non-welfare terms. I'll come back and talk about that in 1 second. The third assumption, however, is that I'll assume that whatever we pick as our values is consistent with the Pareto principle. All right, so I don't think these assumptions are particularly strong. I'm not going to defend them, but let me just say one or two words about them. First of all, I'm not imposing any particular view as to how much we care about redistribution. One can be a utilitarian or a Rawlsian or anything in between and still fit within these assumptions. I think many versions of the capabilities approach to welfare would fit within these assumptions. What I'm excluding is redistribution for its own sake, or for some external moral value. So, for example, if you think that we should redistribute through legal rules because, say, justice demands it, not because it helps individuals, but because of some external value, then you're outside the framework I'm using here. I'm not particularly going to attack that framework or defend mine, but you would be outside of the scope of what I'm talking about here. If instead you think redistribution is valuable because it helps the poor, because you actually want to do this because it makes people better off, then you're in with what I'm talking about and we can analyze the problem. All right, given a social welfare function, the trade-off between the benefits of redistribution and its costs reduces to a mere mathematical problem. Right? We want to maximize social welfare, given constraints about the costs of redistribution, and we can use mathematical optimization techniques solve the problem. The original work along these lines was done by James Merlies in 1971, and he was later awarded the Nobel Prize in part for this work. The actual mathematics are very complex and of little interest to the non-specialist, but we can learn some things from the literature without going through the mathematics. And in particular, the literature shows that the efficiency costs are always, or almost always, important. There remains a vigorous empirical debate about the size of the efficiency costs, but even when we run through the optimization problem with the most egalitarian of social welfare functions, we still end up with significant inequality in our society because of the costs of redistribution, because of the leaky bucket. All right, to summarize then where we are, first I'm going to assume that redistribution is desirable because of declining marginal utilities of income or wealth. Second, that redistribution is costly. Third, that we have some views on this matter as to how to trade this off. We trade it off through a social welfare function. And finally, when we do this trade-off, it turns out that the costs really matter. We can't ignore the labor-leisure distortion. All right, now I want to analyze the role of legal rules and compare that to an income tax as a method of redistributing income. So start first with income and then turn to other pieces of redistribution. So compare a legal rule and the tax system that have similar redistributive effects. Okay, they both, for example, take similar amounts from people with high income and give to those with low income. As noted previously, we can imagine tort rules that or contract rules or any other legal rule that is biased in this way, that tries to help the poor and therefore deviates from the efficient legal rule. And the question is, which do we prefer, the legal rule or the tax system? I consider the legal rule. There are three distinct effects to the legal rule. The first is it redistributes income. Right? This is a good thing. Right? You transfer money from those with low marginal utility of income to those with high marginal utility of income, and this is valuable. Second, because redistributing is a factor in the choice of the legal rule, the rule will be different than the rule we would have picked under a purely efficient system. For example, tort defendants of a certain type might be required to pay higher damages or might be held liable more often than efficiency would demand. The legal rule will therefore impose different tort standards than the efficient legal rule, and therefore will cause at least some individuals to take too much care or too little care. You can say the same thing about contracts rules that try and redistribute on the basis of damages or breach rules. Individuals will breach investing contracts too much or too little. Same with property rules. Any rule that deviates from efficiency will cause some misbehavior that creates an inefficient or creates a social cost. Okay, and finally, and this is the key fact, a legal rule that redistributes on the basis of income will also cause labor-leisure distortions. Right, that is, if the legal rule really does take money from the rich and give to the poor, then it acts just like a tax. And people will work less in the presence of that legal rule than they would in the absence of that legal rule. So it has exactly the same types of labor-leisure distortions a tax does. Now, compare this to a progressive income tax. A progressive income tax also has redistributive effects. It also takes money from the rich and gives to the poor. And this is also good for the same reasons. Tax also causes labor-leisure distortions, as I mentioned already. We have the same disincentives to work in both cases. The tax system, however, does not cause a distortion along the legal margin. Right? It does not cause people to take too much or too little care, to breach contracts inefficiently, to under or overinvest in property, and so forth. This means that the tax system redistributes at a lower cost. In both cases, the use of the legal rule and the use of the tax system, we get redistribution and we get a labor-leisure distortion. But in the case of the legal rule, we also get another distortion along the boundary that the legal rule governs. We get too much care, too much breaching of contracts, too little breaching of contracts. The tax system is the better tool. We can develop this argument a little further by stating it slightly differently. So let's consider a legal rule that favors the poor. And say we, for example, we deviate from tort rules because, let's say, plaintiffs are more efficient, are more poor than defendants, so as to redistribute towards plaintiffs. All right, now, suppose instead of having that legal rule, we have the efficient legal rule, and we adjust the tax system to redistribute by the same amount. So we increase the progressivity of the tax system to replicate the redistribution that would have occurred through the legal system. By making this adjustment, now we have identical distributional consequences. The wealthy pay more, the poor receive more. There are therefore identical benefits from redistribution, and of course there's also identical distortions from labor-leisure choices. But while getting the identical benefits from redistribution at the same cost in terms of labor-leisure choice, we now have an efficient legal rule, which means total resources in society are increased, which means everybody is better off. Right? Strong versions of this argument, in fact, argue that this is a Pareto improvement. So regardless of how egalitarian you are or inegalitarian you are, you should accept this argument. Right? It's consistent with any choice of social welfare function we might pick. Even those of us, myself included, who care strongly about the distribution of income in society should not favor the use of the legal system for redistributing income. Instead, the more we care about redistributing income, the more we should want to use the better tool, the more we should favor it being done through the tax system rather than through the legal system. Let me add one footnote, actually. Ian warned me about this. As a tax lawyer, I tend to say tax system and include the welfare system in it as well. Tax lawyers tend to think of tax and welfare as the same thing. One is positive, one is negative, but they're the same basic policy issues. I mean that here as well. When I say tax system, I mean the tax and welfare system put together. All right, I think the argument so far is pretty compelling, but actually we can pile on and go quite a bit further. So the argument so far assumes that the legal system actually could redistribute income, that it was actually successful at doing it, but that the tax system was merely better at it. But there are separate, independent reasons to believe the legal system is completely ineffective for redistributing income at all. These arguments can be classified under two categories that go under the rubrics contracting around and haphazardness. Contracting around argument states that attempts to redistribute through legal rules will be defeated because prices will adjust in such a way as to offset the effect of the legal rule. So for example, if we insist that landlords provide habitable apartments for their tenants through an implied warranty of habitability, as we have in much of the United States, landlords will simply raise the rents. The tenants will be no better off. And the initial story on this price adjustment seems quite intuitive. We can imagine examining places where prices adjust and where they don't adjust, and concentrating our decisions to redistribute through legal rules in the places where prices don't adjust. Unfortunately, it's a much more complicated story than this. The problem is that when you try and redistribute through legal rules, you typically change the very product under consideration. So for example, a mandated warranty changes the good being sold from merely a good to a good plus a warranty. You're no longer buying and selling the same item. And so it's very hard to think about mere price increases as indicative of how much the cost is being passed on. For example, the extent to which the price increases may merely reflect how much the buyers value the warranty. If they value the warranty highly, then we might expect them to pay a lot more for the warranty. And if they value it not at all, we might not expect them to pay very much more. And therefore, the extent of the price change due to a redistributive legal rule is completely misleading. A big increase might indicate that a lot of value is being transferred to one party, and a small increase might mean that no value is being transferred to the other party. So in fact, our intuitions about prices and the effects of legal rules might be completely flipped from what we originally thought. To make it even messier, individuals will value the warranty or other benefits of legal rules differently, some valuing the benefit of the legal rule a lot and some thinking it's not very worthwhile at all. When the prices adjust, therefore, there'll be redistribution among consumers. Right, if our goal was, say, to redistribute from sellers of goods to purchasers of goods, or landlords to tenants, or whatever you have, we instead might mostly have redistributed among tenants or among purchasers of goods rather than between the landlord and the tenant, or the purchaser and the consumer. Sorting out the actual effects for any given legal rule is very difficult. The theoretical questions are hard, and the empirical questions are probably even more difficult than that. For example, we're not really sure, after years and years of study, whether labor laws actually help workers. They might, for example, help workers who are already employed but make it more difficult for those who are unemployed to get jobs. Right? Similarly, it's not clear whether consumer protection laws help consumers. They don't particularly have a position on this. It's not really what the talk's about. There's a large literature on each of these areas, and some probably help their intended beneficiaries and some probably don't. The only point is that attempts to redistribute through legal rules are quite precarious. One has to be quite careful about even trying to do it. The other standard argument against using legal rules to redistribute income is known as the haphazardness problem. So consider a pro-plaintiff tort rule. You might want such a tort rule because plaintiffs are systematically poorer than defendants, it's said. The problem with such an approach is that it is extremely likely to be both under-inclusive and over-inclusive. It's under-inclusive because many poor individuals will never be part of a tort suit, and therefore will never benefit from this sort of redistribution. It's over-inclusive because inevitably there'll be some rich who turn out to be plaintiffs. Once again, like the contracting around argument, however, it's much more complex once one digs into it. For example, if people are never subject to a lawsuit, they still might bargain in the shadow of the law, and therefore might receive benefits or incur costs because of the redistributive legal rule. Similarly, in the tort case, insurance prices might adjust. So if people generally have insurance, then they might see the redistribution through their insurance prices, even if they're never subject to a lawsuit. Sorting this all out ends up being quite difficult. Moreover, before drawing any conclusions about contracting around and haphazardness, one has to compare legal systems to the tax system. The argument always is comparative. One can't simply argue that one system is bad without seeing whether there's something better to do. And the tax system may not do very well on these grounds. It might be subject to the very same criticisms as the legal system. Prices might adjust to undo the effects of redistribution in the tax world. And the tax system might be underbroad or overbroad, taxing the wrong people sometimes, missing the right people other times. Well, these criticisms of the tax system are undoubtedly true. I think they're likely to be far less true of the tax system than of the legal system. The reason why is the tax system is a dedicated system that is designed and tailored to minimize these effects. We have experts like myself and Ian whose job it is to think about designing tax systems to do this. There's no a priori claim that the tax system will be better along these grounds. We still have to do a detailed institutional comparison, but still I think my initial view, is that it's extremely unlikely that the legal system would fare well along these margins. Okay, where are we then? Taking these arguments together, what I'll call the double distortion argument, the first argument I made, the haphazardness argument, and the contracting around argument, I think the case against using legal rules to redistribute towards the poor, that is on the basis of income, is almost overwhelming. All right, the argument so far has been about redistributing income, but of course income's not the only source of inequality. Right? Race, gender, disability, health, you name it, is also or might also be sources of inequality in our society. And if we care about inequality, we might care about inequality of all sorts, not just inequality of income. Okay, maybe legal rules should be used to redistribute on these bases, even if they're not helpful for redistributing income. Here's an example. Suppose we think that severely disabled are less well off than the non-disabled, even at the same level of income. Right? Their costs may be higher, their needs greater, and so forth. An income tax wouldn't help much here, right? Because disability won't necessarily correspond to income. You can imagine a hypothetical case where everyone has the same income in society, but some people are disabled and some are not. An income tax would then have nothing to do at all, but we still might want to redistribute towards the disabled. Hey, legal rules might help, right? We can adjust our legal rules to favor the disabled and thereby redistribute away from everyone else and toward the disabled. For example, in the United States, we have rules that mandate accommodations by employers for disabled workers, right? The Americans with Disabilities Act. Nothing in the argument so far tells us that this type of redistribution is not a good thing. The income tax only argument so far has been only about income or wealth redistribution, not about redistribution on other bases. And it does not tell us that legal rules should not be adjusted for non-income sources of inequality. Let me give you a footnote on this. In the disabilities case, the legal rule might seem to favor the poor, right? If the disabled are systematically poorer than the non-disabled, then a rule that favors the disabled would seem to systematically favor the poor, but it doesn't really. The reason why is it could have gone the other way, right? If the less well-off class happened to have more wealth than the better off class, then the adjustment would have been pro-rich. That is, it's kind of random which way these non-income adjustments go. Another way to think about it is if you're using the income tax to redistribute on the basis of income. We should think about non-income redistribution as within an income class. You've already adjusted to the extent you can on the income grounds. Any further adjustment beyond what is socially optimal would lead to a welfare loss. You wouldn't want to do that. So redistribution on other grounds should be thought of as within an income class. Right, so accommodation mandates for the disabled then thought of redistributing between individuals with the same income with and without disabilities. Okay, so the argument so far has left grounds for this type of redistribution, but I don't think we should jump to the conclusion that it would be desirable. And the arguments for or against redistribution on this basis are pretty much the same as the arguments for and against redistribution by legal rules on an income basis. So for example, much has been written about whether legal rules that appear to help a given class actually do. This is the contracting around argument. So the studies of the disabilities law in the United States so far have, I think, unanimously concluded that the disabilities law has helped the disabled who already have jobs but hurt those who did not have jobs. That is, it made it more difficult for disabled who didn't have jobs to get them while helping those who did have jobs keep them. And so this means the disabilities law may have primarily redistributed within the class of the disabled rather than from the non-disabled to the disabled. Right? This is the contracting around argument, right? Same argument. The haphazardness argument is also a problem here. The disabilities law seems to be, at least in the United States, both overbroad and too narrow. It applies to some individuals who may not really be worse off because of the disabilities, and it does not apply to people who are so seriously disabled that they are completely unable to work. It is both overbroad and underbroad at the same time. Finally, a version of the double distortion argument might translate to this case. Suppose we compare a method of direct redistribution to the disabled with the legal rule that redistributes toward the disabled. Direct redistribution would have the same redistributive costs and benefits, right? The same distortions, the same benefits, but not skew legal relationships. The disabilities law skews employment relationships and therefore has an additional inefficiency and therefore is probably inferior to a system of direct redistribution toward the disabled. Now, I don't want to condemn all the various disabilities laws or other types of laws without serious and focused analysis on them. I'm not sure that they're bad ideas. There may be much to be said for them, but I really only want to make two points about them. First, the initial analysis about whether legal rules should favor the poor doesn't necessarily condemn this type of redistribution. It leaves room for this. Right? The primary argument I've made today is an argument against using legal rules to redistribute income, but the analysis probably applies in a very similar way to any other source of redistribution through legal rules. That is, we should be very leery of redistribution through legal rules on a non-income basis. And therefore, there are good reasons to believe that legal rules should not redistribute at all and should merely be efficient. All right, that's the basic argument. Let me mention four potential counterarguments or caveats. A common criticism of the argument so far is that the tax system may not adjust. So in the hypothetical, we talked about taking away the redistributive legal rule and imposing an efficient legal rule and adjusting the tax system to make up for it. Right, and a common argument is, well, that won't happen. The tax system doesn't adjust all the time. It's simply not feasible. Merely because we identify a social problem, say inadequate housing or disabilities or whatever it is, doesn't mean the tax system's going to adjust to solve it. Now, of course, inadequate housing and other problems may be caused by market failures, and so fixing those may be the efficient thing to do rather than the inefficient thing to do. Right? So we can put aside efficient changes to housing markets or employment markets or whatnot and talk only about inefficient ones that redistribute. Now, leaving that possibility aside then of efficient changes, the argument is correct to some extent. If the tax system cannot adjust, or if there were no tax system, then we would want to resort to our next best alternative. And if the next best alternative is the use of legal rules, then we might want to use them to redistribute. Redistribution, as I've said many times, is extremely valuable. However, there's no particular reason to believe the tax system won't be available. In the United States, at least, and I believe also in Britain, the tax system is adjusted constantly. Right? It changes almost every year in the United States. Moreover, the extent of redistribution in the tax system is a constant topic of discussion, so much so that observers of the legislative process complain that redistribution dominates discussion to the exclusion of anything else. If you followed the American debates at all about the Bush tax cut, you would have noticed that basically the only thing anyone talked about was the extent of the redistribution or lack of redistribution in that tax cut, whether it helped the poor or helped the rich. Moreover, if some political coalition would block redistribution through the tax system, there's no reason to believe that it wouldn't also block the same redistribution when done indirectly through legal rules. In fact, it might fight even harder against it because legal rules are a more expensive way of achieving the same thing, and therefore the class that loses through the redistribution might have greater costs imposed on it than if the redistribution were done through the tax system. Now, maybe using legal rules gets around the problems of coalitions in government, because courts can make decisions about legal rules, and only legislatures generally make decisions about the progressivity of the tax system. But I think you need a complex view of the democratic process and of courts and legislatures to argue that courts should impose redistribution through the legal system when the democratic process can't do it directly, and when the legal system is the more expensive method of redistributing. The feasibility intuition about the tax system is extremely strong, especially with lawyers, and I'm not sure exactly why. It might be because lawyers are focused on particular cases in front of them, and they see an injustice and want to solve that. Maybe because lawyers are taught, at least in the United States, that legal rules are malleable and should serve social justice, and they want to achieve that end, and they don't tend to think systematically about what else might be out there to achieve those goals. But I think the feasibility intuition, in fact, has very little bite. Okay, second comment or caveat on the argument is the tax system is really a mess. Using legal rules has problems, but the tax system is riven with loopholes. It's costly to administer. It's Byzantine. No one can understand it. It's not the efficient and sleek method of redistribution that I've portrayed so far. How can I stand up here and defend such a monstrosity? Hey, I'm not going to defend the tax system from these attacks. It's part of my job to make them, and I make them all the time. But there's no reason to believe that any broad-based redistributive system would not suffer for similar grounds. Measuring income, measuring wealth, measuring whatever grounds one wants to redistribute on is difficult and complex. And all the problems that lead to loopholes and complexities in the tax system would probably pervade any other broad-based redistributive system. A third comment. Maybe people respond differently to redistribution through the tax system than through legal rules. But the hypotheticals I talked about assumed that legal rules impose the same labor-leisure distortion as the tax system. But maybe people might not notice redistribution through legal rules. It might be invisible. And therefore, legal rules might distort work incentives less than the tax system. To make this slightly more formal, we can base our arguments on the theories put forth by the Nobel Prize winner from this year, Dan Kahneman. Right, he argues that people don't respond rationally to incentives. And so we might, for example, suppose that legal rules only apply infrequently. One is not subject to the tort system every day, let's say. And a common sort of Kahneman and Tversky psychological claim might be that humans underestimate the likelihood of low probability events, and therefore might underestimate the redistribution available or that happens through the tort system if the tort system only applies infrequently. Well, we can't know the truth of this claim without more investigation. It's obviously an empirical claim. I've been assuming so far that people respond to real incentives, that there are no long-standing, large-scale, systematic illusions. If there are such illusions, there might be many ways to take advantage of them, right? Many things we might want to do with the legal system other than merely redistribute. However, I don't think that we could maintain such illusions for long, at least with any large-scale redistribution. In addition, if insurance is available, then the legal rule might apply through the insurance prices, and therefore there might not be low probabilities of it applying. And if there are low probabilities of it applying, then we have a problem with it being under-inclusive. So I don't think you can get very far using these psychological arguments about people not responding to the incentives imposed on them through the legal system to argue the legal system is a better method of redistributing than the tax system. Okay, last comment and caveat before I conclude. I should note that the argument I've made, the main argument, the double distortion argument, not the contracting around and haphazardness argument, is based on actually a formal proof. It can be found in the tax literature. And the proof is known as the income tax only theorem. And it concerns whether a tax system that's redistributive, say an income tax system, should also impose additional excise taxes on commodities. The legal rules, in fact, can be seen as excise taxes, legal rules that deviate from efficiency in order to redistribute. Right? A tort system that takes from one person and gives to another can be thought of as an efficient tort system, plus an excise tax person on one and a subsidy on the other. Right? Now, the income tax only theorem is subject to a number of qualifications, which means my argument is subject to the same types of qualifications. The most important qualification is somewhat technical, but it's worth running through very quickly, is that excise taxes and subsidies can be used to reduce the cost of redistribution through the income tax. So for example, let's suppose an income is complementary with leisure. An income tax, of course, creates too much leisure because it has a labor-leisure distortion in it. And an excise tax then on that activity that's complementary with leisure can reduce the distortion caused by the income tax. Right? It can reduce the amount of leisure. Right? So this sort of excise tax allows the income tax to redistribute more efficiently. It allows more redistribution. Excise tax, however, is not redistributive in a conventional sense. Right? It might be either on the poor or on the rich. It's very hard to say a priori or ex ante which way it would go. Legal rules might be quite similar. Right? If a legal rule that's inefficient resembles an excise tax, then maybe we want to deviate from efficient legal rules in this exact same way. Right? But these deviations from efficiency are not what I believe anyone means when they mean that legal rules should be redistributive. Right? They might very well be pro-rich, they might be pro-poor, they're extremely unintuitive and relatively obscure. If you're interested in the topic, there's been much debate about this in the American legal literature, several articles by a bunch of people debating this qualification to the general theorem. I think it's relatively unimportant. That is, the deviations from pure efficiency could go in any which direction. We don't really know which way they'd go, and they're relatively obscure. All right, so my conclusion, quite simple. Legal rules should not be used to redistribute. I think the conclusion is quite strong when it comes to redistribution on the basis of income. And I think it's pretty strong, not quite as strong, but pretty strong for redistribution on any other grounds. Let me give you a slightly softer conclusion as well. So even if you reject some of the particulars of the argument, and of course, as I mentioned, there's a literature out there that debates a lot of this, the central place of the tax system in thinking about the appropriate goals for legal rules can't be denied. That is, even if there's some place for redistribution through legal rules, the existence of the tax system should completely change or significantly change how you think about evaluating legal rules. Right? The presence of the tax system makes it much less desirable, even if it's still somewhat desirable, which I don't believe, but even if it's still somewhat less desirable, even if it's somewhat desirable to redistribute through legal rules, the tax system makes it much less so, and therefore changes how we evaluate our legal system. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. That was a very interesting and I hope provocative explanation of the system, of this concept of the relationship between the tax system and other legal rules, which is interesting from my perspective as someone specializing in taxation to see that interrelationship highlighted and explored. I hope it's interested you and that we have an opportunity now for questions or comments on what David Weisbach has said. And we have a couple of radio mics around here, so there's a question over here on the, two questions on this side. Can we get a mic? First the one.
You've referred to achieving redistribution by changing legal rules to favor the poor, and you've also mentioned that legal rules may be pro-rich or pro-other groups. Does this fact, or if it was a fact, would this change or affect your argument at all? For instance, would you say that a limited redistribution at least could or should be undertaken through neutralizing such imbalances in the law? Did you get that?
Well, I'm sorry, what was your premise again then?
Okay. Starting from the premise that some legal rules may be pro-rich or pro-other groups, would that change your argument at all,
well,
or have any effect?
I'd like to see those rules eliminated. Right? I'd rather have the legal rule be efficient. Now, if it happens by coincidence to favor the rich, then that doesn't bother me. But I wouldn't want the rule to be systematically to deviate from efficiency to be pro-rich. So, yeah, if we find rules out there that, you know, say a property rule, for example, commonly argued or help the wealthy, if that's inefficient, and they may be efficient, but if that's inefficient, we'd want to get rid of that. If it's efficient, no, we wouldn't want to, right? We'd want to have that legal rule, even if it helps the rich, and then rely on the income tax to redistribute. Right, so if you if you deviate from that rule, say to hurt the rich a little bit, you're going to cause a labor leisure distortion, you're going to cause, say it's a property rule, you're going to cause people not to invest properly in property. They might not improve the property or whatever they do with the property. You achieve the redistribution, you take something away from the rich because the rule is no longer as pro-rich as it used to be. But you're causing the labor leisure distortion because now it's more costly to become rich. Work no longer is as rewarding as it used to be. And you're distorting the incentives to take care or to invest in property. Right? Whereas if you just use the income tax, we get the same redistribution without distorting the incentives to invest in property. It doesn't really matter whether the efficient rule is pro-rich or pro-poor for the argument to hold. You don't look convinced, but
you've been contrasting the content of law or legal rules and taxation.
Yeah.
What about the administration of law? Because the capacity to take advantage of legal rules depends on wealth and income, yeah? So what about the provision of legal aid so that impartial legal rules are in fact impartially applied?
Yeah, I'd support that. Right, so for example, if we believe we have an efficient rule for employment termination, I don't know what that is, but let's suppose there's some rule out there that says you've got to have a hearing. I don't know if that's right or not. And if poor can't take advantage of that rule, then you've got to help them take advantage of it. Yeah, but I think that's efficiency promoting rather than redistributive.
The one thing that legal rules do is they allow you to go through, get very fine-grained, very specific redistributions. For example, from very specific groups of victims of mass torts. And it can be complicated to engage in that kind of redistribution. Let's say, you know, a group of people whose children have some kind of disease that's very expensive to tend to as well as very painful. And it may be very hard on just basic income redistribution measures that we use across society to engage in redistribution that way. Are there cases where you think that we need the legal rules to distribute because the tax system just won't get you to that level of detail?
Yeah, I'll give you a kind of complicated answer because I think it's a really hard question. First thing is, I think my general intuition is that the income tax is actually, at least in the United States, I don't know the British system very well, it's extremely, extremely detailed. That's one reason why it's so long. So we try very, very hard to redistribute on very particular bases. So you name it, someone's got an extra deduction or inclusion or whatever it is. So I'm not sure that as a general presumption, I'd say that legal rules tend to be more specific than the income tax. The second thing is that there might be cases where a legal system observes an attribute of somebody that we care about that the income tax system wouldn't observe. And so therefore it gets information that the income tax system is not collecting. And we might want to redistribute on the basis of that attribute. You've been subject to some tort or whatever it is. And in fact, some people have argued that therefore, on these grounds, the legal rule should redistribute. My response has been to them, it's not actually out there in the literature, it's so new, has been that if the legal system's observing those attributes, then the tax system can observe them as well. Right, so for example, the tax system might try and systematically observe those attributes, who has a disease and who doesn't. But in addition, if the legal system has made that observation already, that information can always be passed on to the taxing authorities. So there theoretically, I think, should be almost no case where the legal system is better at observing important attributes than the bureaucratic tax system is. And therefore, that should never be a basis for using the legal rule to redistribute. But conceivably, I mean, I'm willing to say conceivably, yes, if there are times when the tax system is unable to observe an attribute, the legal system can, and we'd want to use that.
I'm just wondering if you've reconsidered, or if you considered in your argument, any of the inefficiencies that could arguably come out in the tax system when tax rates get very high and that people start avoiding taxes either illegally or legally, and especially that would suggest that as the need for redistribution grew larger, and therefore tax rates had to grow larger, this inefficiency would grow. So I'm wondering if you think that inefficiency is significant or not, and whether we realistically would ever get tax rates that high that we'd realize it.
I absolutely think it's very important. Evasion, in fact, we have talked about avoidance and evasion yesterday as tax rates get high. But I don't think it would change if we use the legal system to redistribute. So for example, if your income is going to cause you to be subject to higher tort liability or higher, more costly property rules, then you'd have every reason to hide that information from a judge as well. Right? So I'm not sure that avoidance and evasion is any different when we use legal rules to redistribute than when we use a tax system. If your money's in Bermuda or wherever it is being hidden, it's being hidden under both systems. But absolutely, as we try and redistribute more, we end up with all these costs, which is why even under the most egalitarian social welfare functions, we're left with significant inequality in society.
Question over on this side.
I have a concern about the developing countries, actually. Wouldn't such legal rules be used transnationally for redistribution in cases where certain costs have been historically imposed by the developed nations on account of climatic change, and cannot world bodies like WTO, etc., think about having such transnational legal rules that impose certain costs on redistribution of wealth in case of, which is not a charity, but in cases where they do impose hidden environmental costs due to their acts of commission or omission.
Can you rephrase that? I didn't quite get all that. Can you rephrase it?
Yeah. My question is that has there been any study in using multinational fora in imposing certain costs in framing certain legal rules for redistributing wealth when certain hidden environmental costs have been imposed on the global economy by the acts of nations or transnational corporations? So I find that where taxation clearly fails, but where such legal rules could be applied is across such cases.
Right. I'll tell you, I haven't thought much about developing countries and taxation. I think it's a very important topic. They have a hard time using an effective income tax in a developing country. Right? You don't see very effective income taxes because they can't get information. They have very low compliance rates. Income tends to flee. So conceivably, I'm not sure quite if this is responsive or not, but conceivably, in a developing country where you have it's very difficult to have an effective tax system, you might have different conclusions. Right, again, the whole argument is dependent on the existence of effective bureaucratic systems to directly redistribute rather than through legal rules.
Question at the front.
This is an observation more than a question, but there is a very big difference between the US and the UK tax systems when it comes to personal tax, in that there's universal filling in of tax returns in the US. But in the UK, I guess only perhaps 15% of the population have to fill in tax returns. This means that if you want to use the tax system for fine-tuning redistribution on a similar basis to the legal system, it becomes very difficult indeed. Either you have to have universal tax returns, which most Americans I speak to wouldn't like to visit on other people, or you have to have adjustments to tax codes for pay as you earn. That's the deduction of tax from wages and salaries. And we've seen some of those in the past, and they're incomprehensible. Or you have what is very much the present development of the Chancellor, and that's tax credits, which are administered through the pay system by employers. And to make those work effectively, you more or less have to have something like a tax return under another name. And there is the risk that the take-up will be very low. So I would like to suggest that there are quite severe limitations on using the tax system to increase equality.
Well, maybe not. The choice to have a return-free system is obviously a choice to have a simpler system than a more complex system. And that's a choice that Britain has made, the United States hasn't made, I think a lot of academics think it should make, that in fact we don't want to have a finely grained system of redistribution. And that's sort of a separate question than which system we should use to redistribute. Right, so if Britain decided it needed to be more fine grained, needed, say, deductions for the disabled. We have a deduction for the blind in the United States, an extra credit or something like that. That if you wanted to have such things, you'd have to have a more complex system. And it's just a sort of decision about complexity rather than decision about which system you want to use. Second thing is that even though more than half the people here don't file income taxes, if the other half do, the wealthiest do, and the social system, the welfare system, the expenditures on public goods and whatnot are out there redistributing. One can have a very fine-tuned redistributive system in the sense of taxing the rich on a fine-tuned basis and then redistributing generally through public goods or other services like that. And third thing is, if you have a legal system, you have the same trade-off with the complexity and the simplicity. So if you're going to impose this complexity, well, you decided not to impose it, it wasn't worthwhile to do it through the income tax system, and why would you want to impose the same complexity elsewhere through the legal system when it's even less efficient to do it that way?
Okay, can I come back to that?
And then one more. So this is great. I gave almost the same lecture at University of Chicago Law School and I got about half the number of questions. This is fabulous.
Okay. Sorry, I think perhaps you misunderstood the question of the man.
Yeah, I think I did. It's very green.
Okay. I think what he seemed to be, he's not there anymore, but I think he seemed to be asking about redistribution on a transnational scale, yeah, through legal rules, referring in particular to examples where developed countries through their actions or omissions have imposed economic consequences through committing or omitting to do things that influence, for instance, the environment and climate change. I think that was something he was...
Yeah, I don't know about the last piece of it. Redistribution on a transnational scale is a really hard problem. There's a recent study by an economist in the United States named Joel Slumrod that takes the amount of foreign aid the United States provides and estimates that on that basis that the American system as a whole values a foreign person as 1/200th of an American. Right, so our current redistributive policies towards poorer nations, at least in the United States, I don't know about Britain, are essentially zero, or very close to zero. A social welfarist, shouldn't necessarily care where someone lives. Right, should be in favor of redistribution transnationally as well. But it's extremely difficult because of incentive problems. Right, if you believe governments are operating inefficiently, then redistributing towards those systems may create terrible incentives. I don't really know what the answer is on a transnational basis. It's something I've not devoted a lot of thought to, but I readily sort of admit defeat that I don't know the answer to that. Now, whether the second half was that policies, so much I understood the second half, which is policies favoring development have caused terrible environmental harms. That's just those policies may be inefficient, right? So the environmental harms are externalities that should be taken into account when you develop. And so those policies may merely be inefficient. Right, so efficiency should say that if you're imposing costs on others, so suppose you're polluting, and you're a Chevron, you go into, you're Chevron, you go into some third world country and drill for oil and you leave a mess. You don't bear those costs, you still make a lot of money selling oil to developed countries. Well, that's an inefficient policy because you're imposing costs on other individuals that you're not considering when you decide whether to develop and how to price your goods. And an efficient system would impose a tax or some kind of way of causing the company to internalize that. So I think efficiency should deal with those problems, not redistribution.
So what you're saying, in effect, is that a lot of those sorts of transnational problems, in fact, are not problems that require a solution by redistribution, but by adopting rules that are efficient on a global scale.
Yeah, but again, I don't know the redistributive answers for on a transnational basis. Mm-hmm. That's a little bit too hard for me.
But I suppose it sort of follows from your argument that if there isn't an international tax system, then your premise that it's the tax system that changes the way we look at legal rules suggests that there is scope for international legal rules for redistribution.
Yeah, to the extent one believes there's such a thing as an international legal rule rather than...
Well, I mean, that's another scale of problem, but assuming that you can devise those.
If they're redistributive, it's unlikely that countries would... A country like ours that's unwilling to give direct foreign aid would be unlikely to agree to an international legal rule that achieves the same thing.
So it's a different scale of problem.
Yeah.
There's a question at the back.
I actually agree with most of what you say, but my question is relating to, I think we also agree that a lot of employment or ecological law is not just there to redistribute wealth, but also to correct market failures. How would you separate the market failure correction part of these rules from the redistributive element in practice?
In practice? Well, I don't know in practice. The argument is mainly addressed to legal academics, so that when legal academics write articles or give speeches or whatever and evaluate a legal rule, so if it's a trademark rule or whatever it is, they should do so on the basis of whether the legal rule is efficient or not. Now, I would readily admit that it's really hard to figure out what the legal rules are. And I'm not, even though I'm coming from Chicago and I believe markets generally work, I'm not going to stand here and say markets are perfect. There's all kinds of market failures, and it's hard to know what the efficient legal rule is. And that's a really big problem, but it's a separate problem from saying, or should be separated from evaluating legal rules on other grounds.
I think we should probably draw to a close at that point. There is a reception upstairs in the senior common room, which you're most welcome to come to, and those who would like to continue to berate Professor Weisbach would welcome to have a go there. But I would like to thank you very much for coming and thank Professor Weisbach for taking the time to speak to us this evening on a wide-ranging topic. So, join us.